And anybody out there who doesn't love this great planet of ours, well, they can leave, right? Maybe we should start a campaign around that. Well, someone who has been loving and appreciating and working to preserve the pristine nature of oceans, or at least the pristine nature of oceans as they were decades ago, Wendy Benchley. She is the wife of the late Peter Benchley, of course, the author of Jaws. Some 40 years ago, that movie terrorized beachgoers around the world, and we're going to be talking to her in just a second about some ocean awards that are coming up this weekend in Washington, D.C., and also just find out what is hot on the topic list of challenges to our seas and oceans, and there are many, but of course climate change is the great exacerbator, causing problems to become worse, and certainly the bleaching of coral reefs a sign, ocean acidification affecting shellfish, and just, of course, overfishing really affecting the thrivability and abundance that I grew up with thinking was just something that would never change. Of course, everything is changing right now, but there are so many people working to change things for the better, to reverse the tide, to turn the eco-tide. That's what gives me hope. Those are the kind of people I love to have on the Green Front radio program. Been covering this beat for 13 years, if you're just joining us. And it only gets more interesting, more intense, more urgent, and more inspiring, as there are so many people out there doing so much good work. But we're still losing on too many fronts, and that's why we have to raise the volume and broaden and deepen our reach, we who are trying to get green media out there. Without further ado, I want to welcome Wendy Benchley to the program. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, Betsy.
I believe I heard you speak at the California Academy of Sciences event. Was it a year ago? Was that the annual awards dinner? It doesn't
it
seem
was.
Like it's been that
it
long.
It was a year ago, yes.
Wait, time flies.
Yes.
Well, what a beautiful location that was to have such an event. And it was very inspiring. I think it was it Philippe Cousteau who was speaking?
Yes,
at that
he was the master of ceremonies.
Yes.
And Jane Lubchenco was there, and Jesse Aucible, and Louis Pichayo, the director of the Cove, and we had a fascinating group of awardees for the Benchley Awards.
You did, and let's start with some good news. The Cove has done very well in terms of garnering, you know, world interest in terms of the problems there, and they've really done it right in terms of managing to get critical mass and traction on this very important issue. To what do you attribute the success of that documentary?
Oh, I thought the Cove, first of all, I thought it was just so well made, and the personal element in it was made it a very dramatic and exciting film. So I think that if you can do an environmental film where there is a storyline, and the storyline was, of course, trying to get in there for all these years and film it, and then they had the you know, the drama of the real footage and of being in there. And I, when I talked with Louis out at the awards, he said they were getting it into theaters in Japan. So they worked very hard that way also to be able to distribute it in many different countries, including Japan.
And I understand there was progress being made to trying to, you know, reverse the slaughter of dolphins and the tragedy in Japan that unfolded in March. Has that had any impact on that momentum?
You know, I do not know about that. I just do not know. I have not stayed up on that, I'm sorry to say, but I will.
Okay, and maybe I can get Louis on the program because I did meet him and get his card at that event. That would be an interesting angle.
Yes. Well, he's going to be here in Washington, D.C. for the Saturday night Benchley Ocean Awards again. So he will be here, and gosh, you should come.
Well, I wish I could. I'm in San Francisco and can't get there. It's my anniversary on Saturday, but I will be thinking of you and all the important work that those who are being honored will be getting some deserved praise. Dr. Sylvia Earle will be there, of course, the champion, my shero, one of them.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. She is just absolutely marvelous, wonderful woman who keeps the ocean agenda right out there in front of everybody's eyes and pulling people together from all different walks of life. And that's something that we're doing also with the Benchley Ocean Awards. Instead of just having one award, we've got them in different categories, and in science and policy, solutions, media, activism, because you know, just one area of the oceans is just not enough. There have been people who are intersecting and working on all different aspects of ocean policy, and it's quite a marvelous thing when you bring them all together into a room, and they interact with not only the awardees this year, but the presenters and some of the people from last year, and there's a great synergy and excitement to meet people from different walks of life who are so excellent in their particular specialty. So now, we're thrilled.
And I understand that you'll also be awarding Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen.
Yes, we will. Yes.
He, of course, became a household name during the BP oil disaster.
Yes, he did just an absolutely superb job, and he was so articulate and he is continuing, you know, to serve on that committee. And I think that he also, I mean, it's so interesting to listen to him because he approaches the oceans from an economic and national security point of view also. And that is something that we all need to start thinking about. I mean, it would be wonderful if we could get the law of the sea passed so that we would actually join the rest of the world and be a part of the negotiation as to who's in charge of what parts of the ocean. So he'll be there, and we will be rewarding Juliet Elprin, who's an absolutely superb environmental writer for the Washington Post, and Steve Palumbi, who has brought genetics and DNA into marine conservation. Steve is the doctor, the scientist who got to Japan and took some whale meat out of the markets and then analyzed the DNA, and he found out that it was supposed to be minke whales, but it was a half dozen other kinds of whales. So so he exposed the Japanese for prevaricating, let's say, on what they were selling and what they were catching.
We also have Dr. Jeremy Jackson is going to be there. He's been on my program.
Yes.
Marine biologist, I think, from UC San Diego.
Yep. And his wife, Nancy Knowlton, who's also a biologist, and she is in charge of the Smithsonian Ocean Hall, and also Greg Stone, who is I've known Greg for years personally, but he now is with Conservation International and the head of their marine programs, and he was the prime mover in getting the Phoenix Islands MPA, Marine Protected Area, established. So they are working hard along with other groups. I mean, nobody can do this by themselves. Everybody works with, you know, I think there is huge cooperation when it comes to working on getting more marine protected areas established. At this moment, it's especially happening in the Pacific, but also, I don't know whether you know, but Coco Island, Costa Rica, has declared that a huge protected area there around Coco Island, and that's going to be the biggest marine park or marine preserve next to the Galapagos in this hemisphere. So
that's good news. I've not heard that. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And we're giving an award to the president of Costa Rica. She's going to be here in town, and we're doing that on Friday afternoon because she can't come to dinner on Saturday, but it's really thrilling.
Well, it sounds like you're going to have a stellar group of awardees. If people would like to attend, they're in the Washington area. How can they do that?
Yes, they would go on bluefront.org and look under the Benchley Award dinner, and they can sign right up there. So we do still have a few more spaces. So, yes, I would love it, whoever wants to come. And there is also a conference happening all day Saturday, Sunday, and there are fascinating panels, and there is more space there for these panels that are happening all day. And then on Monday, we have about 200 or 300 of us who are going to go to the Hill and lobby.
Wonderful.
And yeah.
And specifically, Wendy, what will you be lobbying for? What's up right now?
Well, honestly, I think all of us are going to talk about the law of the sea, but I think there at this moment is no appetite to work on that in this highly charged partisan atmosphere, because we know from the past that there are a lot of Republicans who would vote for it in a heartbeat, but we're a little bit afraid that if we bring it up, they may back off. So we're going to talk.
Playing politics with the planet, you know, like where are they going to be living and getting their seafood from?
It's just so distressing. I mean, honestly, I never quite understood how so many Republicans have, to me, gotten trapped in this. I don't think they feel comfortable with it at all. I mean, I just know too many wonderful Republicans who are strong environmentalists who understand that everybody needs to care about the ocean and climate change, and I think it's a shame that it's sort of moved this direction. But we're going to work on getting senators and Congress people to work on fleshing out Obama's I'm sorry, I've forgotten the name of it now, but he passed an administrative order bringing the ocean and ocean policy into every department of government. So that needs to be fleshed out, and they've had some hearings, and I think that that's where we can make a big difference. It's a little bit like when the Clean Air Act was passed. All departments of government had to have a section where they acknowledged that what they were doing would have an effect on the air, and they had to explain what it was and how they were going to diminish that effect.
And yet the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act are under attack now. It's hard to believe as that is.
Yeah, it is just...
surreal.
It's discouraging. Yeah, surreal is right.
And yet we have all these so-called reality shows dominating the airwaves. My thing, we've not had the pleasure to meet until now, but I've been doing green radio programs for 13 years and trying to, you know, get back on a mainstream platform. Progressive Radio Network is internet radio, which is wonderful, but mostly, you know, my green friends come and listen because they're concerned. But we have to grow the choir. We have to get all Americans to realize what's at stake and to get, you know, to take part. But when you look at, you know, the domination of Fox News and, you know, talk radio, where something like, 95% of the talk is conservative or the hosts are conservative, and unfortunately too many of the conservatives are not conservationists, it's really no surprise that we see opinion polls showing climate change and ocean preservation is not higher on the priority list, or certainly where it should be, given what's at stake for all of us.
Yes, I absolutely
living and,
agree.
And yet to be born.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when Peter died, I decided to, you know, we spent our whole married life for 43 years working on various ocean conservation issues and other issues like that, and Peter did many conservation films, and so I have established these awards, but I'm also going to work, I'm also working with some other groups, and using JAWS as sort of the hook to bring,
so to speak.
Oh, dear, did I really say that?
You did, brilliantly.
Yeah. So to bring other people who may not be ocean, you know, mindful of what's going on in the ocean. And I think there are thousands of JAWS fans out there that I can reach, I hope, through the web and through various social media sites, and try to bring that whole group into the conversation. So we'll see. I mean, everybody's working in whatever way they can, and so I'm hoping that I might bring a new group in.
And a whole generation of kids, like my daughter. I think it might scare her too much. She's kind of a chicken that way. But, you know, to see Jaws and to, you know, hopefully not be haunted by nightmares, but to get the message behind it. So,
yeah
I mean,
you know,
it's been around. It's been so long that there is a whole new generation. And recycle it, absolutely. Get it out there again.
Right. Well, you know, quite honestly, Betsy, it was sort of stunning to Peter and me that within, 6 or 8 years of Jaws coming out where everybody was scared, he started to get hundreds of letters saying, oh, I just love Jaws. It opened up the world of the ocean to me. I thought it was so cool. I'm going to go into marine biology. I want to be like Richard Dreyfuss. And so it turns out that as life has gone along, I've talked with, so many people, Greg Stone and Brian Scarry and other filmmakers and marine biologists who got into it. They got excited because of Jaws and got into ocean issues. So yes, there are a lot of people who were scared, but I don't think they're scared anymore. And I think, surprisingly, it was something that increased interest in the ocean. And people have shown me upticks in the amount of money spent on research projects that were pushed, that escalated after Jaws, that, you know, within 10, 20, 15 years after Jaws, the ocean was high on the burner. So that was a result that was pretty astounding and surprised everybody. Especially Peter and me.
There's a lot of attention on, you know, preserving whales and stopping the dolphin slaughter. But I think most people, even despite Jaws' incredible global success, which continues, you know, don't necessarily think of, you know, sharks being endangered or sharks needing to be preserved, because we have been, you know, because of the media, thought to fear them. I mean, not people who are educated, but I'm talking about the mass public. And yet, just in today's paper in the San Francisco Chronicle, there was a story about leopard sharks washing up dead along the shoreline, and they think it's because of increase in temperature in the bay waters, the ocean waters right off the coast of San Francisco.
Yeah. Well, I one of the groups I work with is called Shark Savers, and we are working along with other conservation groups because sharks, as you may know, are just being decimated. The main reason is that with the huge increase in the middle class population of Asian societies, especially in China, it used to be only the very, very top wealthy people who would have shark fin soup. But now there are millions of people who want to have shark fin soup for their wedding, for business parties, et cetera, et cetera. So there are lots of good education campaigns going on, and what I've found is that when you speak to people who are having shark fin soup, they're astounded if you tell them that sharks are endangered, that actually the sharks are finned, their fins are cut off, and the rest of the animal is thrown back in the water, you know, to die an agonizing death. And I have great hope that with some education that the Asian cultures will back off a little bit on their shark fin soup.
And there's a movie being made about that, I understand.
Ah.
If you're not aware of that, I'll put you in touch with a filmmaker.
Oh, yeah, I would love to know. Sure.
It's just in the initial stages, I believe. We just have a couple of minutes left, Wendy, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention probably my biggest shero, or at the top of my list of sheroes, and that would be Roz Savage, who, as we speak, is solo rowing across her third ocean. That would be the Indian Ocean. Surely you're aware of her.
Uh-huh.
Incredible eco-exploits. When I get daunted, a little bit frustrated with the state of climate awareness and ocean awareness in this country, not to mention green media missing in the mainstream media mix, I think of her, one, you know, row stroke at a time, really raising awareness for climate change and her incredible courage. And, of course, I go on. We all must. But she's really been a great source of inspiration for me, and I know many people who are following her. If you're listening and you don't know who I'm talking about, check out Roz Savage. Her blog is fabulous at rozsavage.org or .com. It's R-O-Z Savage, like what she's not. Not a savage at all, but very courageous. How important are things like that, those solo ocean rows that she's done, and also David Rothschild with the Plastiki, in raising global consciousness?
Yes. Oh, I think they're just absolutely essential and brilliant, and what we need. We need more people doing this, because, as we know, we have to catch people's hearts and minds and connect them in whatever way we can with the ocean. And so bravo to Roz. I mean, she is so courageous and so strong. And I think anything you do that connects people that way is just superb. And I thank her. The world thanks her. The marine life thanks her.
I'll pass it along, because I do send her, we communicate back and forth. She's somehow able to, do blog posting and email from her little solo ocean rower, Roz.
Yeah.
The Purple Pirate. Her boat is painted purple. She's been asking people to come up with a name for her. I think she's decided on Purple Pirate. Well, maybe next year at the 5th annual Ocean Awards, she'll be given an award if she hasn't already. I know you join me in feeling strongly that she certainly has earned it.
I
just wish her well.
Do.
On the rest of her voyage, and I just love to publicize her efforts as much as I can, because she's out there doing it.
She surely is. And you are, too.
Thank you, Wendy. I appreciate
bravo,
that.
Bravo, Betsy.
Thank you. Well, I've been informed and inspired by eco-innovators since I started doing Green Minutes on KCBS Radio back Earth Day 1997.
Uh-huh.
Was on Air America during their two-short stay on the airways, and was in 40 major markets with the only green show. They went bankrupt. We went... they went to black, so my green show went into the red. And no one has done a program like that anywhere on, mainstream radio or television since then. And I think that's outrageous. And maybe you'd like to join me in trying to change that, because given the state of the planet and the amount of garbage clogging up the airwaves, so-called reality media, I think it's high time.
I think it is, too. I think it would be wonderful. Well, I think we need to get you and other people onto some of the other talk shows. It's astounding that we don't get...
Well, I go on Hannity this bar with them. I'll send you the latest appearance. Was from 3 weeks ago, and you will, I'm sure, join me in realizing that this is part of the problem, truly, that the concerted effort to, stop progress on climate action and oceans is being funded by, unfortunately, the fossil fuel industry, and that they are harming advancement of, taking action, and it's got to stop. It's not funny. And it's damaging, and they have millions and millions of viewers and listeners talking about Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, those who would mock we earthers. He called me an earther. I say, and you're not for the earth? Okay, you here's the exit sign. Feel free to leave. I mean, it's preposterous. And we're out of time, so thank you. I'm afraid we have to wrap it up. I'm so glad you could join us, and wish you a fabulous event this weekend in Washington, D.C.
Thank you so much, Betsy. It was my pleasure.
And that is Wendy Benchley, the widow of the late, great Peter Benchley, who did so much for the world in bringing us the book and then the movie Jaws. And they went on as a couple to promote the need for ocean conservation. And it's never been needed more than at this moment. So I thank them for their contributions, and thank the folks at the Progressive Radio Network for making this show sound so good. And I'm reporting to you from my perch here on the San Francisco Bay. They're, of course, in Manhattan, and somehow you're all out there in cyberspace. So thanks for joining me for this edition of The Green Front. See you next time. In the meantime, have a great green week.